Hey, this is Scott Stimson from International Computer Solutions and the San Carlos Computer Club, here with BB, doing the intro for the San Carlos Computer Club.
I thought you're so convincing. You could just pull out your phone and say that, and I immediately think you're calling someone.
I'm just here. Get the intro done. Why are you free to do the intro with me right this moment?
Because it's Teacher's Day. It was Teacher's Day yesterday, but Gus just wanted a day off from school.
All right, and so you got an extra one. 3-day weekend.
Yeah.
And what is your latest passion on TV? I think you have a recommendation you've been watching all weekend.
I don't, won't really call it a recommendation. It's more like something I've been watching.
No, you don't think there's a grandkid out there that might be interested?
There's probably a grandkid that's already watched it. Like, all my friends, when they're friends from like America and stuff, have watched this show when they were younger. And I'm over here like, well, we didn't really have it in our TV here in Mexico.
So what's it called?
Jessie.
Jessie. What is she? She's a
nanny.
A nanny on Disney. A classic Disney show.
Yes.
And you are a Disney kid.
Apparently.
I was waiting for dead silence. It's like Disney.
Disney kid. I wouldn't really call myself that. I've just been abusing the Disney Plus.
You're a good example of a Disney Plus addict.
I'm like the definition of a millennial, but make it younger. My wedding was in Disneyland. I just love Mickey Mouse. My wedding was in Disneyland and our honeymoon was in Disneyland. I just love Disney. I'm a Virginian. I'm a Hufflepuff, but if you're a Slytherin, we can't be friends. I just love me some Disney. I love me Harry Potter. I love me some Ravenclaw.
Hey, look who has emerged from the bedroom during our recording for the San Carlos Computer Club's intro.
My favorite Mickey Mouse character is Goofy.
You're killing
me. Mocking millennials. You want to help me in the mocking of the millennials? Because that is what I do now.
But you are a pop.
Hello,
and that's from a BuzzFeed quiz.
And what's from a BuzzFeed quiz?
Official Harry Potter quiz.
I did.
And she's a Hufflepuff. And what are you?
Anyone that's obsessing over what their house is in a fictional book is Ravenclaw by definition.
So you're Ravenclaw.
But I'm Ravenclaw. You're just a millennial, Emmy.
A millennial wannabe. It's worse, right?
Oh, no! I don't know you anymore.
Okay, between myself and my children is the introduction to the San Carlos Computer Club from May 11th, 2021. I'm Scott Stimson, your host.
And I'm a millennial.
I'm leaving that in.
No.
I'm totally leaving that
in. No.
And this is also
Ravenclaw. I'm representing the whole house.
You millennial!
And we're here to say tech on.
Tech on.
Tech on.
Talk to you next Tuesday.
I took a BuzzFeed quiz for that one.
Bill, your link went hopping through a whole series of hoops to get to me. I clicked on it from our Messenger chat, so it came out in a web browser with a messenger.com link that was redirected to a Twitter link, and now Twitter is directing it to a CNN link. So we've made sure all these different internet companies are getting their clicks.
There you go. Advertising.
I did download 14.5.1 on my iPad.
Cool.
No regrets yet?
No, that was a couple of days ago, so everything is still working fine. But it was 14.5.1.
Jeff Bezos is super yacht is so big it needs its own one word.
Yeah, it needs its own yacht. It's a service vehicle.
He owns a boat bigger than any boat I could afford to buy just to take care of his boat.
That's the captain's gig.
So friends of mine are getting their Johnson vaccine in Tucson at CVS Pharmacy today and tomorrow. No problem getting an appointment.
Alberta truckers are getting the Johnson vaccine in Montana, and the Montana government is paying for Alberta and Montana are on the board. And our truckers have been bringing, transporting their essential services. They can cross the border. And Montana has an excess of vaccines. And so at a truck stop in Conrad, Montana, the truckers line up and doesn't matter, Canadian, American, whatever, Albertan, they get a free shot.
Actually,
and it's one shot deal.
Montana government is not paying for that. I'm paying for it. Paul's paying for it. Scott's paying for it.
Well, thank you so much.
That's right. It's not that no state governments are paying, as far as I know.
Yeah, it's federal government.
Well, the governor of Montana has been talking to our premier, and our premier basically has nothing to do with vaccines either, except that they're in charge of the distribution of it. Yeah, they're all from the federal.
Part of it is because if the states don't use their allocation, then the federal government will take, this is how I understand it, will take their vaccines and tell people how to allocate them. So the states are trying to use their allocation.
Right. Yeah.
Well, so Montana is offering it to Canada. Is that what I'm understanding?
To truckers that are truckers in Montana for essential services.
Pardon me? Can you go across the border and get it?
Me?
Mm-hmm.
No, she can't get into the United States.
Wait, but if you were driving a truck...
It would have to be a transport truck. It would have to be hauling something.
You'd be essential travel. Stuff. Are you saying that's essential travel?
Well, I could put Cheryl in the back of our 3/4 ton and claim that I'm trucking her across the border, I guess.
That was my thought.
Put her in a rocking chair. We said we're headed to Beverly Hills.
Yeah.
I don't remember if we talked about this last week or if this happened since then, but I read that the Alaskan governor has given away vaccines to tourists.
Everybody.
That hasn't started yet.
Okay.
They're still talking about it. But part of the reason helping Alberta with the truckers and talking about having tourism vaccine is they have to use it.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
This stuff expires very fast, and they send it somewhere and they're like, well, we got to get it. Because right now we're kind of down to rednecks that don't want to do it.
That's a way to put it.
I mean, really, why not, if they're trying to help the world with the vaccine, give it out. I don't know.
I completely agree. I think that we ought to just kill two birds with one stone. We should start socializing with vaccines. So we should have a Lollapalooza, and to get through the door, you got to get vaccinated. We should have a Semana Santa, and everybody that comes in has to have gotten their vaccine before coming down the road. You know, the police aren't there to turn you around unless you're refusing to take the shot.
Might work. So will you get the shot for your girls?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't see why we wouldn't. The thing is, right now, doing it in the Mexican way, very similar to the Canadian way, we're in this constant holding pattern. My age group was supposed to get vaccinated last week, and they postponed it for lack of vaccine. And now I heard this week that they've got shots, but they're prioritizing teachers. Which
I read that as well.
Yeah, I mean, I'm all for prioritizing teachers. I'd just be a little bit more for knowing when mine's coming.
So can't you guys go north and get yours?
Well, I could. The girls could. For Yuya right now, it's very similar to Canada. She'd have to be essential travel, or she'd have to fly into the country.
Oh, okay. So as your spouse, though, she does not have a special priority?
We've never tried to push an issue like that, and we've never been treated that way.
Okay.
Like any of her dealings with border crossing the border, you know, right there at the line, we've never been treated like there was any priority because she was my wife. If she'd chosen to be American, that'd be a whole different deal. And we've actually caught that kind of flack.
Oh.
She's caught flack from the people interviewing her going, why don't you just become an American if you're married to an American? It'd make this whole process so much easier.
I wonder.
Yeah, I mean, you're welcome to infer from that they're intentionally making it hard for people.
Well, that's what,
A couple of weeks ago, Mark Mulligan was going up to Phoenix for a show, and Elsa got turned back. She couldn't cross the border with him.
Bill just got back from, I think he's going back up there for more medical, but had a fight at the border because with a letter from the doctor saying his wife is the only one that's allowed to drive because of his heart condition, and he has to get to the United States for this heart thing. And they spent hours at the border until they finally let her through.
Wow.
And he said it was ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. But yet you can fly in. That's
You can fly, and that's, it's class discrimination, actually. That's what it is.
That has been the biggest issue. Like, we have friends that came to San Carlos because they were able to get on a private charter flight, and they flew from Canada to Mexico, you know, over top of the United States. And they landed in Guaymas, you know, so.
Amazing.
And lots of people, you know, we could fly to, well, we can't now because all of our airlines are not flying to United States or Mexico. They stopped the Mexico one. I think it was January of the year. But, we can't fly to Mexico. But we still have international flights arriving and leaving.
Hey, how is it? Does this sound better? Yep. Hey, Jim. Hey, Fred. Fred, I saw you get on earlier. We're just deep in conversation. Good to see you both.
Yeah. Great. Nice to see you. All's well, I hope.
Yeah, everything seems to be fine. We were just talking about COVID vaccination situations and border crossings.
Oh, yeah. 20 new cases on our island over the weekend.
Ow, that's a lot.
And one death on our island. Oh, wow. There's 750,000 people live on our island. So it's a pretty big chunk.
By the way, Alberta has the distinction of having the highest number of COVID cases per 100,000 in North America.
That's right.
United States, Canada.
We're number one.
Number one. Well,
for North America, wow.
Jason Kenney loves to be number one.
Yes, he does. And he certainly doesn't like to take responsibility for anything that is slightly negative. No, he takes all the positive, none of the negative.
I know. Bill, it's amazing because I think he thought he was going to do a three-step and be the prime minister in a...
Well, he was lined up for it.
Yeah.
I think his plans might have got sidelined just a little bit.
Yeah. Well, right here in Vancouver Island's hotspot, 12 degrees at 8 a.m. this morning.
Sounds nice. So balmy.
I don't think Jason would get many votes here.
Hey, did you guys tell me last week that you have restricted travel between provinces right now?
It's definitely discouraging, and even from areas within one province, because our provinces are so huge that, you know, we have 10 provinces that are bigger than your 48 states, you know, so.
Right.
It's
You know, I don't come from any of those 48 states, though. Yeah,
that's great.
if we're talking about size.
And to all our Canadian friends, we'd like to thank you for being between us and them.
Yeah. Thanks for the buffer.
We're the buffer. Thanks a lot.
That's right. That's right. Buff.
Oh, did you hear how we're beating your border lock up for our tourists?
Well, would the Alaska like to contribute to our new wall that we're going to build?
You are the wall.
We are the wall. There we are. It's called the Rockies.
That's right.
Oh, no, they're loading RVs onto the barges, the cargo barges now, and sending them up.
Oh, yeah.
So they don't have to take the highway up.
Yeah.
Oh, like from Seattle?
Yeah.
Because they can't get through, huh?
The tote drive-on barge that they just rolled the trailers up on.
Right.
Yeah. They're putting RVs and trailers up on them, and then everybody flies up and meets it in Anchorage.
Oh, nice. Well, there's a lot of places up the coast where things like that happen here too, you know, because the highway's so far around, but it's an easy shot from Vancouver on the water. So,
hey guys, I just want to say it is 10 o'clock. This is our typical start time for the San Carlos Computer Club. I'm Scott Stimson, your technical host from International Computer Solutions. If you've got a computer issue out there, I'd like to reach out through the internet and take care of it for you. So give me a call or an email, remote@internationalcs.net. And you guys are the San Carlos Computer Club. We meet here every Tuesday, or it has been Tuesdays, at 10 a.m. Arizona Sonoran time. It's based on that time because that's where I'm based. And we have just been missing the stream button I'm supposed to press. So whoever's out there in real life land, if there's anybody out there, is picking up on us late. But we are now, or we should be live in just a moment. And this is a good group. Oh, here comes, hey, Ray Mahoney's going to join us.
Hey, Ray.
Hello, Ray. I think she's muted, So we can't hear her, and she's cameraless, but we can't see her. But we're happy to have you here in spirit.
I didn't get an email this morning, by the way, Scott.
Oh, you didn't?
No.
Well, I am certain it went out. I'm going to look one more time. Yeah. Today's the 11th. Yeah.
I got it.
It definitely went out. You guys got it?
Yes.
Four times.
Okay, but some of those aren't me. Some of those are your Apple calendar.
The rest are my calendar.
I have the same experience on my Macintosh. I get emails from my Macintosh calendar.
Mm-hmm. I wish I knew how to stop that.
There is a way to stop it.
I know. Oh, I just looked at
it. You know what? I'm going to write that down because I'll figure it out for you. Yeah. I don't have a Mac in front of me, but it seems like I figured it out. It's in the calendar app, I think.
I'll have to look. Well, see, that I have
email notifications. The Google's going to be something like Apple Calendar email notifications.
And I've got a home calendar. I've got a business calendar. I've got all these different. So maybe that's why I get so many of them, too.
Well, if email notifications and calendar on the Apple, and I'm just speaking in general, I have no instructions in front of me. But it is intended to send you an email message to remind you you have something on your calendar. And it's taken care of from the Mac computer's operating system. So the options to have them sending you an email notification from your calendar is happening right there in your Macintosh computer. What's this, Bill? Bill's dropped a...
It's a little sidebar. This guy, a quite old gentleman, paid his property taxes of $6 in some location in southern Mexico, and he's entered into a draw. They're trying to promote paying their property tax. He won a nice little Chevrolet subcompact or something for paying his $6 taxes.
Yes, I saw that.
Don Nico.
And this, it's under notifications, but these are actually emails that I'm getting. So I've got to find the email part of that calendar.
Yeah. I'm sorry, I can't remember, but it's a notification function. I'm pretty sure it's in the calendar application.
I get an interesting thing happening. I think it's WhatsApp San Carlos, it's something, and all of a sudden in my iPhone calendar, I will have events, for example, Soggy Peso Full Moon Party, and I know that I never said I was interested in the Soggy Peso.
Isn't that wild?
The same.
Yeah. Thing. Sorry, go ahead, Judy.
I said I get the same notification, and I don't know where it came from, because there is no Full Moon Party, and there hasn't been for several years.
Yeah, and it's funny because it comes up, and then I noticed on WhatsApp San Carlos this week, three different people posted that they had this selfie picture on their phones, and they don't know who the woman is, and they don't know where the pictures come from, but it's got something to do with Telmex. They're all Telmex phones. And
or Telcel, you mean.
Oh, Telcel. Telcel mobile phones, yeah, and they have this picture of this Mexican woman show up, and she's doing like a selfie, but it's in their camera roll. And three different people said, "Wait, I have that too," you know. So,
well, depending on the kind of phone you have, you know, I know that my WhatsApp photos get mixed up with my gallery all the time on my Android phone. So, like, when I'm syncing the phone, if I plug a cable in and connect to Windows Photos, it'll bring in WhatsApp videos and WhatsApp photos that have been shared. Maybe there's something like that going on where it's going across, or they're in the same group. That'd be interesting to see, is if those three people are in the same discussion group.
Yeah. WhatsApp, I turned off the photo thing because it was keeping every little GIF, like if you put an emoticon,
yep,
whatever, a bitmoji. If you put one of those in, it was coming into my camera roll, and it was using up a lot of space. And they were just silly little things that I don't want to keep and I don't want in my storage. So I turned that off in WhatsApp settings.
Yeah, that's a good tip, actually, for keeping that out of your gallery. You can also, you should be able to set your gallery for which folders are being searched for photos. It's a little reverse intuitive, but you actually tell the gallery which photos, what folders are going to be searched for. And the folders are dynamically found. Like they see that the operating system sees that there's photos in the WhatsApp folder and then gives you the option to include it, right? But the only reason it's giving you the WhatsApp folder option to include it is because the operating system already found the photos in it, if you follow me.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Google Photo is something I want to talk about, but, you know, any kind of gallery, I guess, is it's really hard to know if you've got the setting in the software or the setting in what it's coming from. You know, like things are getting really confused there, and it's hard. And the thing about Google Photo is June 21 is coming up.
Oh, yeah, that's right. We are about to lose our ability to do unlimited photos.
And so I need to make sure the things that are going into Google Photos are things that I want to keep, not just the, you know, the documents or the things that come as attachments in my emails. I want to clean that up, and I'm having a hard time. So I need to figure out some more things about Google Photo and the storage and the settings. Like, for one thing, I don't know if I have a Google Photo and Bill has a Google Photo. I don't know if they're tied to our Gmail addresses. I don't know how they were created.
Well, I mean, to answer those questions, yes, if you have a Gmail account, then you have a Google Photos account. It's tied to your Gmail account. If you've signed up for Google services, then you've got an account that has photos, has email, has YouTube. And then that photo... In fact, let me bring up the photo thing here because it shows you what your limitations are. Is it 15? I think it's 15 gigabytes. But if you look in Google Photos to the sidebar, there's a storage. Yeah, it's of 15 gigabytes default. But then what this whole turning off the unlimited is about is that forever we have been able to upload a slightly lower quality pictures, copies of our pictures to Google for an unlimited amount, if that makes sense. So everything on your camera roll can be stored up in Google without worrying about this 15 gigabytes, as long as you choose to upload them in a high quality instead of an original quality.
So that choosing, so it's under settings or something down the bottom there, I guess.
It's actually in the Google Photos app on your device. When you go into your phone device under Google Photos.
But my Google Photos isn't just on the phone. I don't really
right.
go into an app. I use it on the
But Chrome. The option to upload unlimited photos is in the Google Photos app on your device. See, it's the device that's determining. And you do it through the Google Photo. I'm looking for my Google Photos app right now. Let's see. Here it is. And Google Photos opens like a Google app. I don't know if you guys can see my screen, but there's my Google Photos on my phone.
Yeah.
And in the upper right-hand corner is my icon, right? I can click on that and get information about my – if you guys can see that. That's all information about my account, my services. Hope I don't have anything And then which one is it? It is where it says, no, it's not that one. Photos and settings. Photos and settings under backup and sync. And in backup and sync, towards the bottom, it says what upload size to use.
Where did you find backup and sync?
In settings.
I can't find settings.
Okay, so if you clicked on your avatar, your little icon in the upper right-hand corner, I'm kind of showing you on the screen here.
Yeah.
If you touch that,
yeah.
It drops down this information about the account.
Yep.
You scroll up and you'll find settings, photo settings.
Oh, Google Photo settings. Gosh, got it. Sorry. Now I'm with you. Backup and sync.
Okay, and then back up in sync, and then down towards the bottom, it's like the third from the bottom, is upload size. And if you click on that, you can choose what size. And if you choose original quality, it's going to back up absolutely the same thing that's on your phone, but it's going to count towards that 15 gigabytes for free. If you choose high quality, then you'll be able to upload high quality versions of everything, unlimited, until June 21st. Now, what's happening on June 21st is that Google is going to suspend the unlimited. And what it looks like is going to happen is everything that you have is going to stay there, and they're going to give you an additional 15 gigabytes.
Okay, so it says that I have 4.56 gigabyte of 15 left, and on June 1st, 2021. Yes, on June 1st, 2021, they're going to give me an additional 15, so that in my mind, I will have 15 plus the 4.
Well, not clear. What they've said is that what's already in there is not going to count towards your 15.
Oh, so I'm going to get basically 15.
I believe so. It's not very clear. I'm not sure. Like, you're going to be able to keep all the photos that are in there now, but it's not very clear what they're going to do as far as if you're going to be able to add more high quality photos up to 15. I'm sorry, Cheryl, I can't answer the question. I'm just really curious what's going to happen. I see all these different scenarios, and one of those scenarios includes using Google as a backup and having that account suspended for some reason. Because what they've also said is that any Google accounts that haven't been logged into within 2 years are going to be suspended. So imagine you used a Google account specifically to be your backup of your photos, and you've stuck every photo in there. Well, now you're going to have to make sure you're maintaining it at least as often as every 2 years, or they're just going to turn it off.
Is there a way to do that just sort of automatically, like a update every 2 months or something?
Well, there's apps that you can install in your computers, and then in your mobile devices, there's the Google Photos app that you just set up so that it moves things or copies things into the cloud. Cheryl, did you find the answer? Look like you have an answer.
I have found this thing because I've been wondering why both Bill and mine show up. Okay, so under settings, at the top, it said account info, and it's my Gmail. And then it says add account. And I haven't added him as an account, but you go down further and it says partner sharing. And it says Bill's Gmail. So shared with Bill. Bill can access all your photos and save to your photos all photos from Bill. So my 15 gig is going to be used up by both of our, is that correct? Or is my 15 gig separate from sharing with?
I think separate is probably a better way to think about it. I look at those sharing as a partnership.
Okay.
Like you, depending on the permission. So let's just assume you've got full permission. Let's assume that's what has been set up, is you've got full permission on Bill's albums that are being shared. And that's completely separate from the albums that you have shared with Bill. And let's say he's got full permissions. I look at it more like a bridge into each other's space. So you're able to see everything he's put there for you to see, but your permissions may be set so that you can put things there for him. If you put things there for him, it's not in your 15, it's in his 15. Does that make sense?
Well, I hope that that's how it is. Because, you know, it gives me the option of turning off the partnership.
Well, then you would not have access to his photos or files or whatever you have in that space.
Mm-hmm.
You'd probably be elected to choose to keep the photos in your space.
Okay.
But the truth is, I don't know how that looks. But theoretically, that sounds right.
Judy. Google Photo account, but nothing is in there since 2011. So
if you're running Google Photos on your device.
On my Mac, yes.
Hey, Mom.
Hey, I've been on, but my picture hasn't come on and it was turned on.
I see you.
I see you. I've been seeing you the whole time.
Having a great. You like your new glasses?
Movie yeah. star. Movie star has joined us.
A blind one. Little blind.
We started a little disheveled with topics, and I actually was hoping that you'd be here because I wanted to hit the top of our meeting with a happy Mother's Day to all the moms out there. We celebrate Mother's Day in Mexico yesterday, and we celebrate it in the United States on Sunday. So happy Mother's Day to everybody.
Thank you.
And then I don't know if Dad's around, but I wanted to say happy birthday to Dad. Dad was born on May 10th. And so every time we celebrate Mother's Day in Mexico, we also celebrate Dad's birthday. So happy happy birthday, Pop.
He's kind of indisposed, but he might be here soon. Who knows?
Okay.
I'll let him know.
And we're just talking about Google Photos because they are going to shut down their unlimited plans this June 1st. Up until recently, you've been able to run Google Photos on your phone and sync all copies of all your photos up into the cloud. And you haven't had to pay for that storage. And now Google is turning that non-payment off and limiting you to 15 gigabytes of space. If I'm remembering all this correctly, we talked about this months ago and I don't actually have the information in front of me, so I can't claim to be an expert today. I was that day, though.
I just found it, oh, yeah. it says it's 4 years used for the average user.
The 15 gigs is?
Yeah, and they want $1.99 a month to get 100 gigs.
Right.
That sounds fairly reasonable. What was it, 200 gigs on Apple is $3 a month.
Mm-hmm.
So that sounds like it's in line with that kind of pricing. Close. Apple, again, just being more expensive because they're Apple.
Okay, so back to my question.
Yes, back to your question.
Have downloaded since 2011. Why not?
Okay, so they would be downloading either from your mobile devices or from your Macintosh computer.
Yes.
On your Macintosh computer, there's a program called Download and Sync, or Backup and Sync. I'm sorry, Backup and Sync. And if you haven't installed that on your Mac, then your Mac photos would not have been updated. Or if you've removed it, then that syncing would have stopped.
But all of my photos are on all three of my devices.
But aren't all three of your devices Macintosh?
Yes, they are.
And so are you using iCloud for that?
Yes.
So they would be on all three devices using iCloud.
Yes, they are. But how do I get them into Google?
Well, in each of your devices, you would install a piece of software like this Backup and Sync on the Macintosh or the Google Photos app for your iPhone or your iPad.
Okay.
And then you would set that up just like Cheryl and I were just going through the settings. You would set it up to backup. High quality photos.
Right. And so it should be in, it's not the Google app and it's not the Gmail app. It's a different app totally.
It's a Google Photos app. Yep.
Okay.
If you go into the App Store and search for Google Photos.
Okay.
But Scott, I'm in Google Chrome. And in Google Chrome over on the side where my little picture is my account. And beside it is a grid of 9 dots. If I click on that dots, it opens Google Photo. It doesn't open it as an app. It opens it inside Chrome.
That's right.
So
and that's because you have to make the distinction between being on a mobile device or being on a PC. So and that's why with the PC, you're getting access to Google Photos through a web page, just like you described.
Okay.
You go into your apps. That's the only Google Photo app that exists on the PC is through the browser.
Okay.
But to get those photos up there is an application that you can download called Backup and Sync. In fact, where is it? There it is. You see at the top, if you're looking on my screen here, at the top there's an option that says Upload. And if you click the upload option at the very bottom, it says download, backup, and sync. Automatically back up your photos from your Mac or PC. And so this is the app that you would need. Is that coming through clear? Do I need to go into presentation mode?
Yes, please.
Let me do that.
Okay. Upload backup.
So.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So what we're looking at is right now I'm in Google Photos under the Chrome web browser. And in the top bar towards the right is this option that says upload. Oh, I guess my presentation is just now starting, so give it one moment.
Okay, and I have an upload button on the web page photos, Google Photos.
That's what we're – on your what?
On my iPad.
Okay. I don't know about that. Maybe that works differently on your iPad, but in the web browser on the PC, mm-hmm. if you click on it, it asks if I want to upload from the computer, from my Google Drive – or do I want to download, backup, and sync, automatically backup your photos from your Mac or PC? So if I click on this, there's a piece of software that I'm going to be redirected to that I can download. It's an app. And I can install that in.
Yes, I see that. Okay.
Yeah, I can install that in a Macintosh computer or in a Windows-based computer. I mean, of course, they have a different version for each platform. But then this is a little shim program. I'm going to turn off presenting now because I thrive on eye contact and facial expressions.
You're such an extrovert.
So, Scott.
Yeah, Judy.
Even though I'm on my iPad and I'm in photos.google.com and I clicked on that little upload and it says, upload from tablet, upload from Google Drive, or download backup and sync automatically from your Mac or PC. So that tells me that this little thing may not.
If you're going to it through a web browser on your iPad, it may not function the way it's supposed to function.
Okay. So that's when I would download the Google Photos app.
Well, and quickly, just if you can see this, when you click on that download, backup, and sync,
yes,
then it takes you to this web page. I assume your iPad would do this, and it would say backup and sync is for your Mac or PC. For mobile devices, get it on Google Play or the App Store. So there's the ad right there.
Got the ad. So, exactly.
Yeah. Okay. So it would take you right there to download Google Photos on. Well, and actually what it's doing is it's downloading backup and sync. Okay, this is actually something I have not spent a lot of time looking into. But if you're not interested in the full-blown Google Photos application on your either device, you can download a backup and sync app for your mobile device.
Okay.
We haven't really talked about that. All it does is go through your gallery and back it up to, right? There's no real interface for it. There's no editing pictures. There's no collages or any of that stuff that comes with Google Photos.
So, but since they all come together in the cloud, then I would only have to put this on one of my devices. Is that
better? No, you would I think you may have to put it on each one of your devices because I think only the Apple services are aware of those. Like when your Google Photos app runs in your iPad, mm-hmm. I don't believe it's aware of your iCloud photos. I think it's only aware of the photos that are in your gallery on that device. So if you're managing storage, which is one of the options where you leave your photos up in the cloud and you only bring them down to the device when you're working on them, then I don't think Google Photos will see those photos.
Google Photos sees everything that I have taken with my iPhone.
Yes.
On my iPhone gallery.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. But does it see the photos you took with your iPad that you haven't brought into your gallery on your iPhone?
No.
I don't think it does.
And
even though in the Apple Photos program you can see the iPad photos, in the Google Photos program I don't think you can.
Correct.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Thank you, Cheryl, for verifying. I don't have any of these devices. So this is all theoretical for me.
Yeah, the iPad is separate from the iPhone. The galleries are separate from the Google Photo. So on my iPhone and on my iPad, I have a Google Photo app, and I have a photo, which is the gallery, the iPhoto.
Yeah, the Apple Photos, yeah.
Yeah. And it's funny, when I go to do editing or anything on the pictures in Google Photos, I find that if I save them to my iPhoto, they're easier to work with and to get into iMovie and to do things with than out of Google Photo. So.
Well, that would probably make sense because you're in an all iOS, you're in an all Apple environment. Their tools are very easy to use. I bet it is a little inconvenient to move between the two.
Yeah, well, it's another step. Unless there's a shortcut that I don't know of. But what I have to do is, if I have them all in but Google Photo and I want to make an iMovie, it's best to move the ones out of Google Photo, download them into iPhoto, and then bring them up into the movie.
I'm very confused. So they are in iPhoto before they go to Google Photo.
Not necessarily. I have some things that I got off of Google Drive that are saved in Google Photo. Like Google Drive is another thing. That big job that I had done of all of our photos from my family and everything, it all came as a drive from the person that did them. So I had to take them out of the drive. They were zipped, and I could download them onto my computer, or I could download them into my Google Drive, my own Google Drive, not hers. And yeah, it's been a huge thing. And then to actually use those photos in my iOS, it's best to put the ones that I want into iPhoto before I make the movie.
To get them into iOS first. Not pulling them from Google, but putting them into the Apple Photos gallery to begin with.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. The way Apple it curates and takes care of your data. It's even when you're using iPhotos, you're not really looking at you're not looking at where the file is, the file itself. You're looking at Apple's database copy of that file. Sorry, I was just messing around with my layout and realized it has stolen my entire thought process. Let's do this again. There we go. Okay.
Well, with my phone, the photos has the pictures I took with my phone plus photos that I uploaded from my laptop into somebody else's Google account.
What? Do you know that person?
Yeah. So I take bird pictures, and the leader of our bird group has an album that people upload into to share. And so
okay.
I uploaded those from my thing. But can I change the subject a little bit to OneDrive? Apparently, anything I load in onto my computer goes into OneDrive by default and not into my computer storage at all, and I don't like that. I've been so confused, especially since it says your OneDrive is full. Do you want to pay money to make it bigger? And I thought, what do you mean my OneDrive is full? I don't know anything about it.
Yeah, Paul, what's happened is OneDrive has been updated in the last 6 months, maybe even a year. They've been doing it, but it will encompass your desktop and your documents files. And so you can pretty much move most of what your computer's personality is into the OneDrive. All your data, all that stuff can be, and photos can all be stored in the OneDrive. And the idea is that if you were to get onto another computer, you could sign into it and you'd have the same desktop, you'd have the same photos, you'd have the same documents folder. It would literally be the same file. Say, for example, you had a spreadsheet on, I don't know, real estate that you're managing, and you're going to update it. You pull it out of your documents, you update it, and in the background, that update gets synchronized to OneDrive. And while you're not paying attention, you turn on your Mexican computer, it syncs into OneDrive and it updates that spreadsheet. So you worked on it on your U.S. computer and you find it on your Mexican computer, the exact same copy.
So at some point I must have registered into OneDrive so that it knows who I am, because otherwise,
it's so easy.
Computer, I wouldn't know how to find my OneDrive.
That's right. And it's associated with your Microsoft account. So it's very easy to get set up with OneDrive. It's easy to inadvertently understand the instructions as you're setting it up. And what you've done is you have turned on this synchronizing feature. But you have so much content that's been sitting in your computer that it exceeds the amount of space that they're giving you for free. And so you immediately, if you want to use any of these features, are going to have to buy space.
Well, my technical advisor, that is Peggy's sister, set up a computer. And so she enrolled me, and I guess that's how I have it. But like I say, I still wouldn't know how to find it another computer.
I can tell you what you need to do to get away from that error message, so that it's not trying to sync your desktop or your documents any longer.
Trying to sync my ship is what it's doing.
Yeah. Well, the OneDrive appears in the taskbar as a cloud. If you go down in the lower right-hand corner of the taskbar on your Windows 10, there's this nebulous cloud right here, the OneDrive. If you click on that, it'll give you some, like this shows me the last things that were updated to my OneDrive, and it's caught me a little bit off guard, and I recognize it now. It's this copy-free music that I was downloading from YouTube because they said I could stick it in the background of videos without getting a copyright strike. And what I did is I put it on this other computer right beside me, to the right of me. I put it on its desktop. And because I put it on its desktop, it immediately got synchronized up into the OneDrive cloud space. Now, the computer we're on, I have so much data on it that I don't use OneDrive with it. I would do what you did, Paul. I would exceed the amount of space. But the computer to the right of me has so little data that I go ahead and just synchronize it with OneDrive and use the desktop space from OneDrive. And I also synchronize that with a little netbook that I carry around with me because I keep very little data on any of that stuff.
You thought I was there?
Yeah.
So, hey, happy birthday, Pop.
Hi. Thank you.
I gave you a much nicer happy birthday earlier when you were not with us.
Happy birthday to you.
Thank you, Cheryl. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Terry. Happy birthday to you.
Well, thank you.
That was the most wonderful, awful song I have ever heard.
I think if we were really going to do that, we would use that choir site Bill found. So we could all synchronize.
Reminds me of the Morvern Tabernacle hockey team.
That's right.
We could get the Beatles playing in the background.
They're saying it's the birthday.
So, Paul, going back to OneDrive, there's help in settings. I don't know if you see that, if you can see my screen or not.
I don't have a cloud on my taskbar, but I get...
You don't? If you don't have a cloud, then you can go to the start menu and start typing OneDrive.
Yeah.
And it should come up.
So who owns it?
Who owns what?
OneDrive.
Well, it's Microsoft.
Microsoft, okay.
Yeah. It's Microsoft's cloud services. And if you're paying for a Microsoft subscription for Office, then you've got a terabyte of OneDrive.
No, I'm not.
Yeah. And I this stuff is just making more and more sense in the cloud now. Like that Office, that 1 terabyte, for one machine, it's $70. For multiple machines, for five other Office licenses, for five other terabytes, that's 6 terabytes in total. They'll sell you a license for $100 a year.
Oh, yeah.
So you can back up all your computers into the cloud. And like I was saying about the sync feature, you could quite literally have access to the same data, whatever device you're using.
I have to close my eyes.
So, Paul, if you brought it up like I did, I think you need to click on OneDrive properties. No, I'm wrong. Where is it? OneDrive view online. Because what I'm looking at right now is the folder that is choose OneDrive folder to sync. Well, that's a roundabout way to get there, but that works. So this would be the same thing if we went from the cloud. Let me double check that I'm giving you the right information. Going to settings.
Half dozen different places.
Manage backup. Yeah, it's, geez, that's a frustrating Microsoft. So different ways to do the same thing that uses completely different language. But what you're looking at right now, taking forever, is it's going to propose that I set this up, and it's saying that it can't because I don't have enough space. If you were already set up like this, you could take these check marks out. But Paul, that's not where you are. Paul, you're right here, I think.
Yeah.
And if you click on OneDrive with the right mouse button and you choose OneDrive folders to sync, it brings this dialog up.
Okay.
And you can take check marks out of desktop, documents, pictures, anything that you don't want to have.
Oh, okay.
Synchronized. You can pull all these out. And
well, it isn't really synchronized because the pictures don't appear on my hard drive for the computer. They only appear in OneDrive because when I would pull up the start menu over there, I see pictures. Oh, I'll click on that. Well, that's the pictures folder in OneDrive. It isn't my computer. So I've been mistakenly putting them into that folder.
Well, and the frustration is we didn't have this syncing of documents and pictures and desktop from the beginning. In the beginning, you would pick a space that you would sync into your OneDrive space. And so anything that you wanted in the cloud to be available to other devices, you would have to redirect into that folder. And like for me, that's how I'm still functioning because I haven't bought any space and I've got too much data. So there's only a handful of things that I want up in the cloud and available to me on whatever device. And so that's how I function. I have one folder that synchronizes. But now with this change, the change is good. The subscription, I don't know how you feel about micropayments, but I mean, I think it's worth it. It's good value if that's what you need to do. I'm thinking particularly of customers I have that have computers in different locations and they want to keep them up to date. They have, and they already own Office. That's the other thing, is there's people out there that just are already paying the subscription fee, but they haven't taken advantage of OneCloud. But the moment you buy that Office package, you have a terabyte that you can just dump stuff into. So you can immediately flip this thing on and it will sync everything from your desktop and your documents. And away you go. Each computer you hit has access to the exact same data.
Well, I'm wondering about people that live at home and work in an office. And if they set it up with their office to sync, their company may be upset about that.
Well, and actually, because Microsoft it caters to corporations, it's a business software company. That's been thought of. And so when you use OneDrive software, you can have it reflecting more than one account's space. So you can set privileges on a work computer that you cannot use a private OneDrive account. Or you can go the opposite. You can set it up so that you have access to both. But when you're outside the office, you don't have access to the office's OneDrive space.
So your office IT person would set it up for you so that you could.
That's right. It'd be company culture that would decide it, and then the IT people would help you figure it out.
You know, that brings up, this is a sideline, but something I often thought of when I was working, that it used to be that if I had a project, I would have a file folder in a file cabinet, and the file folder would have a nice description of what, you know, what project it was. But when I go to the computer, it's a file on a computer with some cryptic meaning only to me. And so if I die or somebody else takes my place in the thing, they'd look in that computer, they wouldn't find any of my historical information on projects and things like that, because I'm from a culture of, a file name has to be less than 9 characters, you know?
Well, Paul, actually, it probably wouldn't matter much as we go into the future. because so much indexing is being done on data that I bet if somebody was looking for something specific, all they'd have to do is dump your files into a modern operating system, like Windows 10 is a modern operating system. And you could just index those files, and then you could search them by whatever they have as far as contents.
Oh, yeah, for the project name or whatever.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I mean, you may not be able to get an overview, like going to a file folder and flipping through it. But if you were looking for specific information, then you could find it in that manner, easy enough.
Well, that's good. Now I can rest easy.
Good. I think that your OneDrive is probably not on at the moment because you don't see the cloud.
Yeah, neither is my camera for some reason. Let me reboot it here. I have an external camera because, after all, this computer doesn't have a camera. Okay, I think it's going to start again.
So we've been bouncing around topics. There's Paul. Paul's back. Welcome back, Paul.
Yeah, I was taking a stroll on my planet.
And I've brought a few topics, and Bill and Cheryl have brought some topics. How about the rest of you? Do you have anything that you'd like to bring up in our meeting? Is there any problems we need to solve? Sorry, Mom, you're muted.
I have a TV show and a movie to bring up. So when we get to that point.
To recommendations?
Yep.
Pardon me.
Fred was, I thought he was waving because he had something to say, but then he left. So maybe it was a wave goodbye.
It may have been a wave goodbye, yeah. Or maybe, help me, I'm losing everything. Help me. Well, what have I got? We can go through recommendations. I've got two topics I'd like to bring up that I thought you guys would find interesting, and then maybe we'll go to recommendations. I've got one here that is very interesting. Have you guys paid attention to the lawsuit that's going on between Epic and Apple right now?
Don't know.
This is the Fortnite lawsuit, and what they are. Mom, you've joined us twice somehow, I see.
Mom was frozen in one of them, and then she's one.
I removed the frozen mom. Oh, she's frozen in the other one now. Well, we'll see what happens. I think she might be having computer problems.
We know somebody that could help her.
So Epic is this company that created the video game Fortnite. And it's okay if you don't know what that is, but anybody under 20 knows exactly what Fortnite is. It is the biggest thing ever. It's the Minecraft of the moment. They get to play games in it. They get to skin their characters in it. They are living alternative lives. They call it the metaverse. If you've watched Ready Player One, then you're getting close to what the Fortnite experience is for people. And what has been happening is in this lawsuit because Fortnite has been kicked off the Apple platform, where a large number of their community, they have iPhones or iPads, they're playing this game, and they've been kicked out of the App Store. What I've put on the screen here isn't related to the Epic battle any more than the amazing things that we're discovering because of disclosure in the legal battle. And one of the things that we've recently discovered is that back in 2015, 128 million Apple devices were compromised, and Apple's management decided not to tell anybody. It was too big of a deal. They wanted to have it all cleaned up before it ever got out. Never actually got out until this court case that's going on right now. So I bring it up, and I'll put this link here in our chat as well as on today's meeting, so you can read through it. There's some really interesting details in it. But I think the most pertinent thing to keep in mind is that they knew about this for the last 6 years. They decided not to disclose it. We would not know about this now if they weren't already in a lawsuit. They are the godfathers of security and privacy. So if you have bought into Apple because of their stance on security and privacy, you may really want to pay attention to this, because it goes well, it seems to ride contrary to what they're trying to sell you. I'm very familiar with the hack. We went through a period of time where a handful of apps got into the App Store. A handful in Microsoft is, or in Apple is like 4,000 apps, something like that. Got in 400 or 4,000, I can't remember. Got into the App Store, and the majority of them were legitimate programs that had been authorized by Apple to be in the App Store. They're built by legitimate programmers. However, they were built using a compromised set of tools. They did not use the Apple tool set, but they downloaded the Apple tool set from a suspicious source. And so then every app that had been created with that set of tools had this security compromise in it. And it was 128 million devices. They say 18 million of those devices were from the United States. So you could infer that it's 110 million other devices outside the United States. All of them suffering the same compromise, allowed them to behave as a botnet. I mean, it's just like the worst of what you would expect from any equipment, but just surprisingly horrible for Apple. Well, we knew about the hack. We didn't realize how extensive it was until this court case came out. Anyway, I thought you guys might find that interesting.
We do.
2015, did you have an Apple device back then? Because it was probably on this list of compromised devices.
Yeah.
And I had another, I mean, if there isn't questions or comments on that, I'll just leave you with the link and you guys can do you. It's really a fascinating reading. And it reminds you so much that Apple is a corporation. They're worried about a lot of things. I suspect they are worried about your privacy and security, but they're also worried about their bottom line. They're worried about their reputation. They've got to juggle all that, their shareholders' wealth, everything. That was an article from Wired. There is another I find fascinating article from The Verge about the University of Minnesota, who is not being allowed to contribute to the Linux kernel any longer. Apparently, the University of Minnesota, unbeknownst to the Linux kernel contributors, the people that authorize the contributions to the open source projects of Linux, the university decided to do a research study into how easy it is to insert security issues in open source development. And so they put together a research project proposal and started submitting known failures, known flaws to the Linux repositories. Now, the whole point of this research was to point out the insecurities in this approach to software development. And what happened was they got caught by those processes that evaluate software for problems. They actually discovered it because there was some question about the software that was coming out of the university, and the last submission had absolutely no functionality. It was very suspicious because it was submitted as a contribution to the software package, but it had no function. It had nothing that was going to, it wasn't fixing something, it wasn't plugging a hole, it wasn't creating more features, it just had nothing. And so that kind of perked up the ears of the reviewers, and they started looking through it, and all they found was a security flaw in it. And so then they started doing some research and discovered the researchers that are doing research on them. And this is when this one guy, Greg, and if I was a Linux guru, I would probably know who this guy is. But he's a foundation fellow, Greg Cronin Hartman, lost his shit, if I can say that, and just banned the entire university until they can go through. I mean, they're not accepting anyone, any contributions from the university, from the umn.edu email address. Not only that, all the code that has been submitted in the past is now being removed from the Linux kernel So they're ripping this stuff out of their software, and it's all being put up for re-review. So he is well, punishing the university for using them as lab rats. In fact, he says something to the extent, in fact, I made a note so I wouldn't have to look for it. He said, researchers from the school apparently knowingly submitted code with security flaws in order to show how potentially malice code could get through the approval process.
That's the same lame-ass excuse hackers use when they get caught.
Yeah. Oh, here he used all of the code submitted in the past is being removed and re-reviewed. It seems like it will be a massive amount of work. But Crow Hartman has made it clear that the developer community doesn't appreciate being experimented on, and that all the code from the university has been called into question due to the research. And it seems to me the only thing they would have had to have done, in all sincerity, is let somebody know they were going to do this. The university knew they were doing this. The advisors knew they were doing this. But what they didn't do is they didn't let Linus know that they were going to do this. Or even this guy, Greg that I don't know, but I'm sure a Linux guy out there probably knows. I mean, it just seems like all it would take is we're doing this research study. Only a few people need to know we're doing it. And what they've really done is they've just soured, they've poisoned the well there. Now they're going to be under scrutiny. What this article in itself I find very interesting, a lot of great details in it. But the comments at the end are totally worth it, because I'm not really clear where I sit on it, and it's obvious no one else is either. You get wide range of opinions on this. And one that I keep coming back to is, they got caught, and that's the whole point, is they got caught. And if they hadn't gotten caught, this would be a different kind of story. The whole point of the research was to not get caught and to show how you could submit problems in an open source development community, and they weren't able to successfully do it. And so that kind of sounds like the story to me. Others are chastising the Linux community for being personally offended. Others are chastising the university for not using proper channels for doing such things. But I found all the comments very interesting. And if you have any interest in the way open source software is developed, this will enlighten you a little bit to the kinds of things that they're dealing with. And I'm just dropping this in our chat right now. Are there any questions or comments people'd like to make about such things? Any stories they'd like to share? Well, have I once again? Oh, go ahead, Paul.
As a researcher, I would say that they're not going to let Linux know that they're going to do this, because that would poison the research. Because you tell one person at the top.
Sorry, Paul. Somebody's speakers are bleeding through.
If you told somebody at the top, it would filter through the organization and they'd be ready for you to submit something that was spurious.
Yeah, I mean, there's got to be a way to do it. There's got to be like a double blind test kind of thing where people outside of that loop are still at a level where they know what's going on. So when it's discovered, they'd be like, hey, Greg, calm down. We knew this was going on. This was the whole point. When you think, I mean, if you let Linus know, I mean, he's not, well, actually he is. That's a bad example because he is just deep in it. But I'm sure there's some people up there that are the right people to let know things like this are going on.
Well, it would be their security department, but then they're the people that they're testing.
Well, and, you know, another point of discussion in the comments was that this kind of security concern with open source development is very well known to open source developers. It's another reason that they got caught. Is that even what they were going to write the research on isn't revelations, because anybody that works in these communities understands this is where they have to look for the security problems, is during this submission process.
Well, I'm a big fan of Wikipedia, and I've heard people criticize Wikipedia because, oh, anybody can change anything in there, da-da-da-da-da-da. Well, that might be true of political submissions or something like that. But I've looked at the process. So if you want to change something in Wikipedia, you submit it. It's reviewed by a committee, and they decide whether it's going to take effect or not.
Well, there are some topics that's very much the case. And, Paul, I think Wikipedia is a perfect analogy to open source distribution of software. Wikipedia, I haven't done any work on Wikipedia in years, but back when I would do submissions to Wikipedia, they would be live instantly. And if there was a grievance, then it would be flagged and someone would review it. And many times, like a discussion group, there'd be monitors, like assigned accounts for those particular topics. But it's a very, very similar kind of environment. What I learned at the time I was doing it is that Wikipedia is valid information because the people it matters to continue to curate it. And there's a higher level of responsibility for the value of the right information than there is the value of the wrong information. So you can tell, you can get into topics nobody cares about, and it's just ridiculous information. You'll have a Mickey Mouse marrying a Superman or some goofy stuff like of that level going on. But the topics that do matter really matter to people that come back and read through and check their work and check work that's been submitted since then. And they're constantly revising themselves to make sure that they've got the most accurate information. So the garbage that goes in doesn't get a chance to last very long.
Yeah, well, I'm looking mostly at animal descriptions and things like that. Just they're just important to zoologists or whatever I'm looking at.
Well, there was a movement a few years ago in the skeptic movement. It was called Guerrilla Skeptics, and they went into Wikipedia and would fact check a lot of stuff in there and file complaints and request reviews on information on different subjects. And they did a lot to clean up what Wikipedia was doing, because there were people that would just go in and they'd get all their followers to post the information they wanted on those sites for Wikipedia.
Like a sport.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, in that context, back when I was editing Wikipedia, I was editing Wikipedia entries for San Carlos, and it was the wild, wild west of Wikipedia, and I was adding links to the computer club, links to my business, links to real estate. I was just filling up the page with stuff, and I would come back, and stuff would be removed, but what wouldn't be removed would be things like... I won't say exactly who it is. Some Mexican real estate agency here in San Carlos has been here longer than I have. So all the stuff that I had added that was considered like my business or my clubs or all that stuff had been removed, except this one real estate business had been left there linked. And my attitude is kind of, well, if you're going to pull all the commercial stuff off this page, that I'm okay with that. But if you're going to leave just your commercial stuff on this page, then we're going to have a war. And so we went battled back and forth for weeks as I would resubmit information that would be live. And a week later, somebody would check it out and they would pull it all off except for their own stuff, because they're the only ones that are editing it. And we went back and forth and back and forth. And finally, I think they figured out who I was. And because... as soon as I stopped touching their stuff and they stopped touching my stuff, and everything settled down.
Start with an S.
But, what's that?
Did it start with an S?
It's the I'm not going to say any names. It's probably still there, though. You could probably go to Wikipedia San Carlos. If you find some commercial links, that's probably who I'm talking about. Well, and the other thing that's cool about Wikipedia, you might be able to go back. That would have been like 7 years ago. You could probably go back that far and see what that article started out as. Well, those were the two topics that I thought you guys would find interesting, and I've left you the links for that. If you feel like reading more, you can. I don't really have anything else except to go on with recommendations. So I heard somebody had brought some recommendations. Who was that? Was that you, Mom?
My most favorite part of the whole meeting.
What have you got for us?
Oh, boy. Okay, hang on. Did you tell them I sent you a message last week when I couldn't be with you about a series called Bloom?
No, not yet. I haven't said anything about it.
Let me tell you. Bloom is on Hulu. It seems fairly new to Hulu. I'm not sure. But it's an Australian story. That should surprise you. And it's about a small village town that lives on the river. It's not current. It's not old times. It's in a current-ish time. And they have a flood. And they have people who die in a flood. And as time goes by, I don't know how much time. Oh, I guess it was a year since the flood. A plant.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. It was the best part.
She had me on the edge of my seat.
I was so ready for it. I hope she's not just talking to the kitchen right now.
Okay, let's imagine what this plant could do. Is it like the one that eats people?
It's a triffid.
It's a triffid? Oh, okay, that's Star Wars. I was thinking of...
It's not.
Feed me.
Feed me, Seymour, yeah.
That's right.
Oh, here comes Dad. Feed me, Seymour.
Okay.
Hey, we lost you, and you're muted. You're still muted. Okay. We were all so excited. Oh, there you go.
All right. Okay. Mine's all snapping still. It's got it. When you hopefully get here, we can. It's called, anyway, it's Bloom. About, and these little plants start growing, and the bloom of them leads to some amazing things. It's really delightful. Your dad got into it, and we had to really just keep streaming it because he was enjoying it so much.
The way you describe it is that it's a sci-fi, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. But, of course, it doesn't have anything like robotics or any of that. It's not. It's sci-fi in the sense of a new thing happening in the world that may be good for it, you know, or good for the people.
Or maybe not.
Yeah. You'll have to see it. I think it's a 6-part series. It looked like they're set up for more. So you like Australia the way we do, you are going to enjoy this. Then there's a movie we watched last night that's on Prime, and it was new to us on Prime. It's called Wild Rose, and it's about a gifted singer who wants to go to Nashville, a country western singer. That's her goal in life, is to go to Nashville. It's just that she lives in Glasgow, Scotland. So it's a big reach.
Oh, wow.
It's fabulous.
Is she a country singer?
Country singer. Someone called her a country western, which she quickly corrected. She is a country singer. Her voice is fabulous. I'm sure we've heard her before because it's too good to not hear it. But then... what happens, you know, the whole story is about her trying to get to Nashville. And it's so delightful and lovely. The young woman is the funniest thing. You will enjoy this movie. That's me. That's all I got.
I'll jump in.
Okay.
I watched a movie this week. It's a few years back. Green Book. The story of Dr. Shirley is a concert pianist, a Negro, and hires a New York.
Some heavy guy, a violent guy, to be his driver to kind of protect him as he's driving through the South.
Right. And it's a really, really nice movie. Interesting, the Negro situation. And it's based on a real life thing that happened. So I really liked it. I just noticed on my What's Up San Carlos that they're showing a movie this week at the Yacht Club called Bombshell. And I wondered if anybody knew that one. Bombshell at the Yacht Club.
And I didn't even know they were doing movies at the Yacht Club.
Oh, every Wednesday night.
Haven't paid any attention. Haven't been going out and socializing.
3 weeks or so since they've been doing it. Maybe
3 weeks?
3 weeks for sure.
Yeah, they started up again, but it's just something that comes on the newsletter. But they also said they were doing beer can.
I've seen this. The Bombshell is this one, isn't it? It's not Weinstein. It's the others. The news. Roger Ailes. I just brought up the Wikipedia for it. It's the whole Roger Ailes scandal. It's got some real good actors in it too.
It's on
Charlize
Hulu.
Theron.
Find it on Hulu.
Nicole Kidman, John Lithgow. Wow.
What's the title?
Bombshell. It's 2019, and Yuya and I watched it. But we really liked it. It really made sense out of that whole time period that we went through.
Is that the
where
Hulu?
They were?
Oh, Me Too.
The Me Too movement. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that whole time period. But it really tells the story of how they were abusing how he was abusing his role there, his power, the power dynamic between him and his reporters, and it gives you a real insight into the way Fox kind of developed as a culture.
And it's sort of like that series that Chester and Jim had me watch. Oh, I can't remember what it's called now. Oh, Succession. Secession, I think it was.
Secession, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's media moguls and all the terrible things that they did in that one. And, so I'm going to...
Is that me or is that Cheryl? Do you guys have me?
Do you get that?
No, but I can usually get it off Stremio.
Okay.
I think I must be I'm having bandwidth issues on my end for some reason all of a sudden.
Mm. Oh, snap. I'm so familiar with that.
hopefully it's coming back.
The other thing I wanted to ask about is we finished watching Resident Alien, and we're left with some questions, like why did the doctor kill the doctor, and we didn't get that settled, so we're wondering if there's any news about another episode or another series.
Yes, it's been contracted for the second season, so I don't know if there's any information when it's coming, but they've been continued.
I thought the alien killed the doctor by accident, even though you're told that later in the series.
Not that doctor. The first doctor, Sam, we're kind of hinted that he is the one, not the wife, that put the stuff in the insulin.
Oh.
Yeah, in one scene.
Oh, you're right. You're right. I'm sorry. The first doctor. Yeah, yeah. No, that's what we get, is we get the idea now are we spoiling it? Yeah, I don't want to go into great detail. Sorry. This is an awesome show. It's so fun and funny that I would recommend it to anyone to watch. So I would hate to spoil it for you.
Yeah, and it's really quite good. James, I think you and Carolyn would really, really like it. It's got the native element that I know we share an interest in, and the outer space type thing, but it's very funny. It's really good. And now, Scott, you tell us that you know that actor, and I've become quite intrigued with his facial features and the way he can do things with his mouth and everything. So
he's
what
the male
else?
I Love Lucy, Lucille Ball.
You could be right on that, Bill. That's a great description of him. He has worked into those kinds of caricatures of himself. I think the next weirdest thing he's done is he's played the protagonist or the antagonist on DC's Doom Patrol. And there's two seasons of that, and he plays the bad guy. You don't get to see him until about three episodes in. You hear his voice. He's narrating the show. But then you don't get to see his character until about three or four episodes in. But Doom Patrol is really odd superhero sci-fi stuff, and he's really good in that. And one of the first places I ever became aware of him was playing the pilot on Firefox. Is that right? No.
Firefly.
And that's an easy recommendation to sci-fi fans. That's space opera, space westerns. And literally, they're like brown coats and horses, and they've just mixed those two genres together in that and it's a one season old Fox show. Fox used to be notorious for canceling these awesome shows.
Yeah, it's one season and with no ending.
Right.
You're left hanging.
What they did is they came back a number of years later, brought the whole cast together and made a movie. And the movie is kind of the first season redone as a movie. It's a slightly different story, same characters, same kind of drive throughout, same kind of arc through the story, but slightly different kind of stuff that, and obviously you're not going to be able to get a season of episodes into one movie.
What platform is Succession on?
Oh,
that's a good question.
Succession was an HBO. We watched it on Stremio, or I watched it on Stremio.
Thanks.
And Firefly, would you recommend the series and or the movie?
The movie is called Serenity. Oh. I think both are awesome. I think you can watch one without the other. But if you're a fan of Firefly, you really appreciate the movie Serenity for what it is. It was really playing fan service because they knew they had a great thing and they knew it was a corporate decision to kill it. And everybody that was involved in Firefly was happy to come together and do this movie.
So it's almost a recap kind of thing?
Yeah, it's not a reboot, and it's kind of a retelling. Like if you were to, maybe Sid told me this one time. Somebody told me this one time. If you were to tell the story of Firefly, it would be the movie Serenity.
No, the movie is just a way to shut up the fans.
So as you can tell, it wasn't Sid that told me that.
What they were trying to do with the movie was give it an end, and that didn't work at all.
Seems like they're not satisfied.
Yeah, because the beginning of the movie is like the justification of the characters, where they came from, which you discover through the series. Each episode, you're finding out more about the background of the characters. Whereas in the movie, you rebuild the character development, even though you would know that from the series. Bye, Judy.
Later.
Have an awesome day. We'll see you next
Bye,
week.
Judy.
Well, Scott.
Yes, sir.
I just looked up the Nuevo Guaymas and San Carlos, and the International Computer Solutions is still there, and our club is still live streamed on Tuesday at 9:15, apparently.
Oh, where is that? What is that on?
Wikipedia. On the Wikipedia.
On Wikipedia.
Site. All right, and the only other external link is What's Up San Carlos.
There you go.
So you have to update yours if you're going to.
So
I guess so.
Is that a win for you? A win and a loss?
I consider it a win. My stuff's up.
But it's wrong.
Well, you know why it's wrong is because I haven't updated it since we've changed our times.
There you go.
I had forgotten all about it until today's anecdotes. Hadn't given it a thought. I'm glad Jim did the research because it'll incentivize me to go back and update that information.
So what do you look up on Wikipedia? You just look up San Carlos?
Yeah, San Carlos. So there's all kinds of them in Texas and everywhere around. But the one you want is Nuevo Guaymas.
You just scroll down till you see the Guaymas one.
So, yeah, I would recommend, especially if you're a sci-fi fan. If you're a sci-fi fan, you're going to enjoy Firefly and Serenity. He doesn't get to do the kinds of things he's doing now in that show, but he's still a great actor. He's funny.
And what about that Doom Patrol?
Doom
Patrol?
Yeah, Doom Patrol. And he was in a short-lived series where he was not the reason the series got canceled. He was great in it. It was a TV show about the lives of normal people in a world of superheroes. So it was like the research assistants, the marketers, the PR people all around the environment of superheroes. And I cannot remember what that was called. And well, I really enjoyed it. I was ready for more seasons of it, and then it was canceled. I'm trying to figure it out right now. I'm spelling actors. Oh, of course I can't spell his name right. T-U-D-Y-K is his last name. Tudyk. Alan Tudyk. Superheroes. How come I can't remember this? Powerless. That's the name of the show. Powerless. He plays Bruce Wayne's cousin, if I remember right. And he owns a, he's like head of a huge global international company that designs products and services around superheroes. And it's a fun show. It did get canceled. You follow regular people as they deal with superhero stuff going on in their town. And they had, it's like a sitcom where you're at the Starbucks coffee kiosk down in the lobby, and a chunk of concrete comes flying through the window and crashes to the ground because some super is fighting some supervillain right outside, and you're just trying to get change from your latte. It's that kind of show. I didn't come with a plan to recommend it, but I was trying to think of other Alan Tudyk things that are really easy to get a hold of. He has done a lot of sci-fi stuff. He's just really easy to find in sci-fi. Can I find his Wikipedia? Let's see what else he's done here.
I'm on it now. Resident Alien, Tucker versus Dale versus Evil, Firefly, The Knight's Tale, Rogue One, Star Wars, Dodgeball.
Oh, I forgot he was in Dodgeball.
Yeah, he was the pirate.
Yeah, Steve the Pirate. Of course I would forget.
Moana, I think he was just a voice there. iRobot.
Go
ahead.
Go ahead, Sid. What were you saying?
Alan Tudyk's famous for that. He plays just these oddball characters on the side of a lot of things, and you never realize it's him.
Yeah. Yeah, or you're absolutely right. He's kind of that kind of actor where you step back and go, really? That was him?
Well, it's like I watch a lot of British movies, and Daniel Craig. Daniel Craig with hair is kind of weird to look at compared to what he is now with the short hair and James Bond from Layer Cake on. And it was like, that's him? And Alan Tudyk's the same way. It's like, oh, that was Alan Tudyk? Oh, that makes sense now. But you never realize.
He must not have a family. Look at all this work he's done. This is just amazing.
Yeah. Oh, and he does so much voiceover work, too.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. I completely forgot. He was K2SO in Rogue One. He was the robot, the obstinate robot co-pilot.
Yeah.
Yeah, I totally forget that. Bill, do you know who I'm talking about?
Who's
the robot that's the robot in the movie Rogue One? The gangly one that was giving her grief throughout the movie?
The guy
she get a gun and I don't get a gun?
Is he the one that plays really good poker? Is that the one?
Rogue One, Jan Erso, the story of how they got the Death Star plans. It was that one-off movie.
Oh, yeah. I watched it. I don't remember him, though.
Oh, well, he's worth rewatching it. Rewatch Rogue One for him as a robot, because the robot's got some of the best lines. There's a scene in there where she whips around the corner and blows the head off of a robot.
Now I got you. Yes.
She looks the other direction, and there he is going, did you know that wasn't me?
Right. That's Tudyk. Now I got to go back and watch it.
Now you got to go back and rewatch that movie. He was awesome in it.
What's that movie? iRobot?
No,
Rogue One.
Oh, Rogue One.
It's a Star Wars movie.
Yeah.
Rogue One. I'm going to put Rogue One on our list. Boy, I may just rewatch Rogue One.
Yeah, he's going to. He's going to go watch it again.
Didn't we watch Rogue One in Guaymas?
Maybe.
An aside. The movie theater in Guaymas. When we actually went into a movie theater.
We watched more movies in Guaymas than we did anywhere else. We love the popcorn there.
Oh, man, yeah. We're really missing that theater, and especially the popcorn. Having like a dozen different flavors or half a dozen different flavors of popcorn.
And it's the only place I've ever seen those little tables that sit between you in the beverage holder. Those things are awesome.
Yeah. Well, and now nobody owns that theater. That theater's for sale.
Oh,
They're not. Maybe we should collectively buy it.
I'm not ready to collectively do anything indoors. So I don't mind buying a movie theater, but it's not happening this year.
Our daughter-in-law and granddaughter had a freak-out experience for them. They went to a greenhouse, which is outdoors, and, you know, it's got big Quonsets. And they thought there were a lot of cars in the parking lot when they got there on this Sunday. And it was about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And they went to go into one that she thought was like a gift store at the greenhouse. And the guy said, well, there's a side entrance right over there if you want to go on in. So her and her daughter walk around, go inside this room, and they open the door, and here's this. It was a church service or a whole group, and it was just the end, towards the end. They're all hugging each other. Nobody's wearing a mask. Our granddaughter looked at Mommy and said, Mommy, this isn't right. So they left. They went into to where you actually paid for your plants that they got. And here they've got this buffet luncheon, and all these people are serving lunch, and all these other people are eating it. Nobody's wearing a mask. It just was a freak-out experience for them.
There is a reason that we're number one in COVID contamination. There is a reason for it.
Well, I don't know if it's a good sign or not, but this morning I was listening to The Daily, and they had a whole thing. The Daily is the New York Times daily podcast, and the topic for today was the social anxiety of bringing things back to normal. And I thought that was an interesting topic for them to choose. They talked to people that were having trouble with the idea of adjusting back into life. They are fully vaccinated. The mandates have been lifted in certain areas. They have more freedoms. And the whole article was about people having trouble adjusting to those freedoms. Many people saying, I'm going to continue to wear masks. I'm going to continue to social distance. There are some people that are out there before they're being told it's okay, hugging people. I'm vaccinated. I'm just ready for life to go back to normal. And then there's these other people that are way over on the other side of the spectrum that are dealing with some anxiety because they're not ready to return back to what was normal.
And there's some people that didn't believe that it happened at all.
Right. Yeah. Well, and there's also stories that I don't have trouble agreeing with, that maybe normal wasn't working, that maybe this is a great opportunity to rethink what we consider normal to be and how it should work. Part of this article was about people that absolutely are not going back to their old job the way they want it. That they're going to re-educate themselves. They're working in some different field. As soon as they had somebody on there that was saying that the moment I'm being told I have to come back to the office, I'm resigning.
Yeah, we certainly are entering a new world, and it's kind of exciting. I mean, we've gone through a lot of pain to have to reach this point. But it's really exciting, especially if our new president gets the money he wants for infrastructure and everything. There's going to be work everywhere for young people to do, I think.
Yeah, that would be very cool.
Wouldn't that? By the way, Canadians, are you getting any of the Alaskan serum yet? Our governor's been talking about sending some to you.
We've been getting pretty good supplies on in BC right now. Million this week, I think.
Oh, good.
Hey, before we go too far away from recommendations, I did show up with some stuff. I showed up with one movie that maybe you've already seen it, but we finally watched it. We didn't think it was going to be very good, and I just forced the issue because I was curious. It's Ford versus Ferrari.
Oh, yeah.
If you haven't seen it, it's on Disney Plus right now. And it was a great story. It's got Matt Damon and Christian Bale in it. And I thought they did a great job. If you're not into the history of car racing, I was completely enthralled with Christian Bale playing this awkward English guy. I completely forgot it was Christian Bale throughout the movie. He did such a great job. I don't know if that's how the guy actually is, but it definitely was not Christian Bale. Matt Damon played Matt Damon.
And he does it well.
He does it well. It was a good movie. It was, I mean, it was real good. It was exciting. The changes, the dynamics between the racing team and the corporate overseers, the relationship between Ford and Ferrari. It was all very interesting. I also feel like it did a really good job of being dramatic and drawing you in to a story, and then almost defining a line between it and the history of what was going on. I felt like I watched an interesting documentary, but I wouldn't think of it as a documentary. Like they did a really good job of having the meat there in the story right alongside the drama. And I guess they didn't focus on a love story. They didn't focus on any other conflict than this race to beat Ferrari at Le Mans. And I found that really interesting. Yeah. Yuya didn't want to watch it, and I just started it. We had talked about it a couple weeks prior. She just had no interest in it, and we just started it on a lazy Saturday, and we were both sucked into it. We couldn't get off the couch. It was great.
Well, it looks like we have a really nice number of things to be looking and watching this week.
Mm-hmm. And then very quickly, I've got two things. If you're a hacker, if you're interested in this stuff, Jim told me, and I checked it out this morning, that the latest release of Kodi has been put out. So Kodi 19.1 is now available. This is a bug fix release. So if you've been running Kodi 19 and having some problems, maybe you'll find it. I'll put this. There's a blog post about with the release notes of the fixes that have been made. Typically wouldn't have paid attention to it, but I'm looking for a particular problem that I had occurred in my computer, and I was looking to see if it was on the list. It wasn't, but the problem has gone away with some video updates to my Windows computer, so I think that my problem is gone. But I was still looking in this blog post for any updates. So there's a link in the chat talking about the changes in the new Kodi 19.1. And then, again, another one for the hackers out there. I recently have come across a tool that I've found very interesting, especially if you're interested in playing with different versions of Linux, but just about any ISO file that you would use to build a USB boot drive, you can run with this software called Ventoy. And that's what I get for randomly clicking on stuff on my screen. It's no longer in front of me. Where did it go? I've got it right here. Got it right here. Ventoy, Ventoy.net. Again, if you don't have any interest in this kind of stuff, you have absolutely no interest. But if you do have interest in this stuff, if you like I know Bill and I have been talking about Linux stuff for a long time now. He's been trying different flavors of Linux on his computer. And you do this by building a USB drive. You take one of these and you set it up, and maybe it's Linux Mint, or most recently I've been playing around with Parrot OS. But this Ventoy software, what this Ventoy software does is it will create one of these drives as a menued boot. It releases the space so that you can put your ISOs in there. And I got a picture on the screen there kind of what that looks like. When you boot this device up, it gives you a menu, a dynamic menu made up of all the ISOs that are on your USB drive. So in the picture here, you're seeing there's Arch Linux. There's a Chinese Windows 8.1 file. Here's CentOS, another copy of Arch Linux. Here's another copy of CentOS. These are all different files that would be used to create a USB drive. An ISO would be used to create one of these so you could start your computer. In this case, using this software, you can put all of those ISOs on one of these, and this software would allow you to pick which one you're going to use from a menu. Bill, are you following me?
Yeah, I'm following you.
I think you'd find this particularly interesting because
I would find this particularly interesting is getting Home Assistant to run. That's what I'd be particularly interested in.
Well, that's your most latest project. But this.
Yeah, I know.
This drive right here, I've got four different live CDs of Linux on it. And I can plug it in, and it creates a menu in front of me on boot and allows me to choose which live CD I want to start with.
I'm having enough trouble with one. I don't need five.
Well, say you're trying to determine which one is the one you want to use. You could put all five on a Ventoy formatted USB, and all you're doing is rebooting and picking the next one, rebooting and picking the next one.
I understand.
Yeah.
I'm with you.
It's very cool. And not to mention, there are tools out there that are bootable tools for recovering your data, fixing problems with computers that run as a live disk. And you could put those as well as ISOs on this and have a whole Swiss Army knife of tools available to you. So those are my recommendations for today. Some hacker tools and a movie about Ford and Ferrari.
So we started the thing today about telling you that we were supposed to have fiber optics coming in to our home tomorrow. And it is very interesting to me that, like, we've had a lot of problems with our internet. And we, because of COVID, do not have any service personnel going on to anybody's land or into anybody's homes. So when I signed up for this new offer from Shaw Cable, it's going to be fiber plus gig, 1,000 megabytes upload speed per second or whatever. And
up and down.
Right now we've got 100, and so this is going to be, 1,000. No, we have 10 now. That's right. We have 10 now, and it's going to 1,000. So it's supposed to be super, super, super fast.
Yeah.
It's going to be wonderful. So I said to her, do we need somebody to come and do something on our land? We live in a rural community where on the main street, there are poles and the power and the cable is there. And a long time ago, we bought this place in 2010. I think it was around 2011, 2012 sometime. They ran like a directional drilling thing from the road underneath our driveway and beside the house. So she tells me that basically we have fiber optics available to us through that line, and we've never seen them do anything. So how the heck can she do that?
Well, one of the things that surprises people about fiber is that it's been around for a long time. My San Carlos story is one I tell a lot because people get excited. They hear fiber optics is coming to their neighborhood. I just helped a customer get an appointment to have fiber optics installed in their house. But they haven't done anything recently to bring fiber optics to that neighborhood except turn it on. And I wouldn't be surprised if they're – and you won't know until they're coming out to your property because they're going to have to bring it in your house. So they're going to have to come out. If you've never had a line of fiber run to your house – then they're not going to be able to bring it in. They're going to have to bring it into your house.
Well,
now the only say again, Bill.
Well, all she said is they're just going to send us a new router and we just have to hook it up and we're up and running. I don't see how she do it because the only thing coming in the house is coax.
Right. So the exception to that would be if they're changing out where your coax is hooked up. They're switching it to a fiber router out there or a fiber hub out there.
That would be the only thing they could do because it's coax coming underground. I mean, it's a coax cable. I know what they look like.
The last mile would be coax then. From the pole to you would be coax.
300 yards. Like there's a box on the other side of the road right across from our driveway.
No, I'm sorry. The last mile is a terminology used to describe you to the pole.
Yes, I guess. Okay. So is it possible then to have fiber up to there and then still get the 1,000 MPS down the coax from that point?
I think so. I honestly don't know off the top of my head. But
well, that's what they're selling us. They're selling us the high speed.
And she seemed to indicate that it had something to do with the modem.
No, it is the modem.
Yeah, the modem would have to be, it's all of it. it's the cables that are used and the router on their end and the router on your end. It all has to be able to support faster speeds. So when you buy that kind of equipment, when you install that kind of equipment, it is rated up to a specific speed, and it can't go beyond that without being replaced with some faster equipment.
Okay, so we're getting this modem today, and we have on it that system that we bought, the Deco Enhancer, whatever you call that thing.
Okay, I just did a quick coaxial cable bandwidth search on Google, and it looks like you could get up to 1 gigabit through it. So yeah, you'd be maxed out. Like at least from this article on allconnect.com, I get nothing for saying that. The difference between fiber optic and coaxial cables is an article right here I haven't read, except one paragraph that shows that coaxial can go up to 1 gig. Well, in fact, go ahead.
I know that when I see the router, if it's only got a coax back connector on the back, and nothing that looks like a fiber optics, then I'll know that there certainly isn't fiber optics coming into my house. Well, I know there isn't. It's just coax.
Answer this for me. A coaxial cable and a fiber cable look different?
Oh, God,
yeah. They're completely different. Yeah, a fiber optic cable is glass. So when you look at it.
Oh.
That's coax.
That's coax. These are fiber optic fibers right here around this Ethernet jack. You see these lit up dots? That's what a fiber optic cable looks like. And you can pass so much data through a fiber optic cable that there are plenty of just one strand of fiber cables out there. And they've got protection all the way around them so that they can endure the elements. But it doesn't need to be anything but one thin little piece of cable.
Okay, then my question has to do with, we have this router, and we have hooked up to the router that system. Okay. Do we have to have a different kind of connector to the...
You're going to be replacing the router you have with the one they send you.
Correct.
And it's going to have Ethernet, because Ethernet is this jack that we see in the picture here.
Yeah.
This is the standard for networking now. And so it's going to have to support this because there isn't another option. There's no way they would be able to sell the fiber optic connection to you with the new router if it didn't have the ability to plug one of these cables into it, because there's no other way to do it.
But the problem's going to be, once I connect the Deco to the new router, then I'm going to have to do a bunch of configuration again.
I don't think so.
Last time we did this, we changed to a different router. Everything, in fact, I'm on the chat room with the girl. She turned off the switch before I got the other one activated. All the lights went out. Everything shut down in our house.
Okay. But everything that you're using, all the smart stuff, your computers, they're all connected to the Deco. Right? They're all on your home side of the network. All we're talking about is bringing in our internet into that network differently. So there's nothing that's going to change. Your internet comes from your internet provider, and you connect it into your Deco, and then your network's off on that side. So when you change this router, you might change your outside IP address. You're definitely changing the physical direction the data is coming and going. But when it hits your Deco, the Deco's just give me internet. So it's not, there's nothing on the Deco end of things that is going to change.
I don't
all
know
your life.
That though, because our Roku TV and our remote and things, they all have to be looking at the same password, same Wi-Fi.
They do need to be on the same Wi-Fi. So if you don't already have them on the Deco, if those are running on a different router, say the router that came with your provider, then those are going to disconnect when you disconnect the old router. But the goal would be to have everything inside your house on the Deco, and then it's just like changing connections.
Well, I think I'm going to spend an interesting day or so.
And I think we're going to be offline for a while. So
we're going to be back to just turning off light switches physically. Come on. A little
oh my
sympathy,
gosh.
A little sympathy.
The Dark Ages, literally.
The Dark Ages. Exactly. Like I have my basement set up. I have an 8-ball table down there, and I just tell the Amazon to I say it's 8-ball. All the lights come on, the music comes on, everything comes on. You know,
the heater.
This is not going to be fun.
But Bill, I mean, certainly you've got the Roku and the remotes and all that on the Deco, right?
Not necessarily. I think maybe they are.
That's what you ought to spend your day doing, is making sure every device is on the Deco.
Well, okay. So how do we know if it looks like, okay, my Wi-Fi.
It's on Thompson 6. That's the Deco.
That's the Deco. So everything should be on Thompson 6.
Well, I know one
or,
thing
or
for
the
sure.
guest network of the Deco, if you're using the guest network.
There's one thing for sure that I know isn't on it, and then that's our thermostat.
I did that. We got the Deco like you and Paul have, and I got most everything on it, except my office is still on my old router, and I took the old extender away. But what I forgot was the Alexa. And so last night, we're listening to the Alexa, and Yuya wants to take it outside because we had people over for Mother's Day and we did an outside dinner. And so she brings it outside and it gets disconnected. She can't keep it connected to the internet. And it's because it's getting its connection from way out behind the house in the trailer.
Yeah.
And so getting the Alexa on was a pain in the butt. It took me, 10, 15 minutes to get into the Alexa app and change the Wi-Fi over to the Decos.
Well, I'm sure I've got some pieces hanging out over the edge there somewhere that's going to show up pretty much as soon as I change the router. As soon as that girl says, she says, as soon as you plug it in, it sends a signal to whatever, and it immediately switches over. It turns off our old one, turns this one on.
And
I see what you're saying.
As soon as I plug it in. Anyway.
You know what would be interesting to know is if they are selling you fiber optics in marketing speak only. Have all the bandwidth out there. They don't even have to retool anything on the pole.
No, nothing. They're not coming out.
But, yeah, so all they do is send you this new router, and now you have fiber optics. Well, if that's the case, you've always had fiber optics to the pole.
Yeah, we've been running on the fiber optics, and it's choked down.
So you'll have the same crappy service, but it'll be 100 times faster.
I'm not going to be happy if that's the case.
There's nothing like incurring errors at a faster rate. It feels much better than having errors slowly.
Okay, I got a quick question. not quite on the same topic.
Okay.
We have the Amazon playing, a music system. And whenever we play, I just have them say, Amazon, play my music. So it goes in and says, here's your playlist music. And I got one album on there that I played a few times, and it keeps coming back and giving me this stupid album that I am songs off of it that I don't want. And I go into my music and take it off my playlist, and it keeps coming back. And I can't
figure out weird.
How the hell to get rid of it. Unless this album is so frickin' long, it must have 50 songs on it. And it's a weird one. It has weird names, so I don't recognize the name. It's basically a steel drum / penny whistle songs, and they got their Caribbean names on them. Like just really strange names. And I keep canceling them out. And I'm downstairs, and all of a sudden I get one of these album songs. And I'm almost ready to throw the damn speaker across the wall because I don't want it there. That's my rant, and I'm done.
I'm not sure what to tell you. While you've been talking, I've been trying to get into Amazon Music as a website because I know I've done that before.
Well, and
the experience you're describing, I've definitely had that experience. And I can't remember whether I'm still having that experience or if what I did, because it seems like I did what you did. I went into my playlists. I made sure it was removed. Oh, yeah. But one of the things that was causing me frustrations is I had liked music. At some point, I had put like a like on the Amazon Music app, And then that was influencing the music that was coming up. And maybe that song would come up more often, and other songs that were based on that song would come up and be recommended to me.
But I don't know. I've gone in and taken out a couple of other songs that they're on one of our playlists that we've actually played, and it doesn't seem to come back. But this one thing kind of keeps on recurring. And I can't just go to the album and say, take all of these album songs off. It just doesn't let you do that. And it won't let you wipe out your history. It'd be fine.
Really? You should be able to wipe out your history.
I'm not. Well, I looked. I couldn't see a way to do it. But I'm going to go back. I'm downstairs, and I hear it. And then I forget when I come back upstairs to go and take it off.
I just wanted to say that comment that won't allow you to remove your history should be a red flag that you haven't found it yet. Because of the European Union, because of their statutes of data protection, all these services have a way for you to wipe out your history.
Yes, they have a way. So.
Yeah, they have a way for you to identify your history, to see it, to download it and stick it in your like you wouldn't be able I don't think you'd be able to download the songs, but you should be able to download a list of the songs that you have listened to.
Yeah.
And quite possibly the dates you listen to it, the frequency that you listen to it, the kind of data that they're collecting on you, they're mandated to make available to you.
Yes.
So if you can't find a way to delete the history, you just haven't found it yet. I would say, okay, because of those data rules that we're having to follow on the internet these days.
I went Googled, Amazon history and found some sites. I fooled around with it, if I recall, and didn't have any success, but probably didn't spend enough time actually beating my way through it.
If you couldn't find a function that would allow you to see what you have been listening to or download it, well, I wouldn't be surprised if you found some notice from Amazon explaining why and when they're expecting to have those features implemented.
Yeah. Okay.
You know the way Amazon is. I mean, they're so way out in front of what they're actually doing.
Yes.
Like they've got all these ideas and things they're trying out, but I really feel like they use us as beta testers all the time.
Okay. So I'm leaving the club. If we don't come back next week, you'll know I'm still trying to find a way to get on.
be on your cell phone.
We're going to dedicate next week's meeting to getting Bill and Cheryl back on the internet.
Well, I'm not so much worried about getting on the internet as getting the vacuum cleaner to work again.
Getting what to work again?
Rosie, the vacuum cleaner.
Oh, there we go. Yeah. We're going to check in on you next week, and you're going to be sitting in the dark with a vacuum cleaner spinning in circles behind you.
Yes, exactly. Maybe I'll do that. I'll have her come out and do a little dance just to show that we actually are up and running again. That's my That's my proof. Yay. Tech on.
Well, let me see. Are we done? Have I hit everything? Did we hit all your questions, all your issues, everything that matters for this week?
I'm not sure we solved them, but we hit.
All right.
I've got things to watch.
Carolyn, need more to watch.
Yeah. Carolyn and I want to talk to Yuya, too, so we'll have to figure out how to do that.
Sure, yeah. I mean, she's available through her cell or through the office.
Mm-hmm.
I can tell her that you're trying to get a hold of her.
Okay, we'll try and get some kind of an email thing or talk to through the club, you know.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
I have a question for Bill.
I think Bill just jumped off, but Cheryl's still there.
Yeah.
Okay, I want to know why your robot is called, is it Rosie?
Yes, because of the Jetsons. The Jetsons had a robot made, and her name was Rosie.
Rosie the robot.
See, girls' names on robots here doesn't work. It has to be a male one. And I really think vacuuming is a male's job anyway. There are male jobs. And so we call ours Oscar.
Oscar. Oh, okay. Oscar. I like Oscar. When we had my first Roomba, I said it was him because who doesn't want him to, to do things, but I never gave it an actual name. And Bill, when she got the first one, it was a shark and he called it Susie. But then
that's
it's become
for a shark. real short. Oh, fun.
With this generation, my children, I keep finding myself in trouble for the pronouns I use. Yeah. So our robot is named Cleaner. And if you assign gender, you might ruffle some feathers.
Yeah, it does in my house, too.
Well, I think we've come to an end. I think we've exhausted our topics.
And each other.
But I think it's been another really fun meeting with very few technical problems. And I sure enjoy you guys showing up each week. And I'll continue to do meetings in this form for as long as people want to do them. So I hope you'll be back with us next Tuesday at 10 for the San Carlos Computer Club. And again, if you guys are having technical issues out there looking for help, I'm here to help. Get a hold of me, scott@internationalcs.net. You can find all our videos available and podcasts. You know, after we're done with this meeting, I take the audio out and I make it a podcast you can listen to using iTunes or whatever you use to catch your podcasts. And that's the one you'll hear the intros created by my family and I, mostly Bibi and I.
On that, your daughters were talking on this last one, and I totally agree with the one sentiment about why do we have to keep buying new iPhones? Why can't we just buy a phone? You know, I thought, right on, young lady. But then she went on to talk about old people, which all the other ones said to her, be careful, there's a lot of it was quite entertaining. Thank you.
I'm glad you enjoyed it. Yeah, we were like, hey, know your audience. And my other daughter's like, old people are wonderful.
Yeah. We'll accept that as the truth, right?
It was a very cute conversation. Yes.
Well, I'm glad you enjoyed it. So if you're looking to hear my family, mostly my kids and I, making an intro to the Computer Club, you won't find that on YouTube. You got to go to our blog at sccclub.org, and you'll find a link there to the podcast that I create. This meeting will probably be out somewhere between now and Saturday, depending on what my workload is like. You guys, in your respected places, in your corners of the internet, stay safe. Stay happy, stay healthy, and tech on. We'll talk to you next week.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye, Scott.
Bye, guys. Bye-bye. Bye, Mom.
Bye.
Bye, Jim. Bye, Sid. Bye, Mom. How are your eyes?
I can't see anything. And, you know, the house is so dark, I can't find anything. And I'm trying to read where I need to do something here, and I can't see it. It's really weird. It'll be done soon, though.
So I'm a little confused about where you are in that whole process. I was thinking, have you only had one operation so far?
No, I just did the second one, the left eye.
Oh, okay. So you did one eye and then the next eye.
Yeah. And the first one went so well that I thought, wow, this is just going to be really nice. Well, this second one has been a bit of a challenge.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
It's all right. The doctor keeps assuring me that